we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
We start with a headline from the Brentford local news website, read by Neil Sleet.
Crack found in man's bottom.
And our thanks to all those who sent that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Rebecca Front. And opposite them on my left, Andrew Maxwell and Hugo Rifkin. Jeremy, whose tax system could soon be scot-free?
This is all the fact that, as part of our bribe for Scotland staying within the Union, the British government is giving Scotland most of the tax-raising powers, which is part of the sweetener. Now, what happened was, in the run-up to the referendum, basically, Scotland said, I need to start a new life, and that life doesn't include you. And England said, don't go, we'll be nothing without you. And Scotland said, I can't carry you anymore. And then England got belligerent and said, well, go then, just go and see how you get on without me. And then Wales said, oh, stop it, both of you, can't you see what you're doing to us? And then we agreed to stay together if England went for counselling.
Get excited about this. Alistair Darling said that the proposals would end in floods of tears, and I thought, I think he's overestimating just how emotional our attachment is to tax proposals.
I
mean,
I think it'd be more interesting if we were allowed to make tax proposals for the other lot, don't you think? So if England could make it for Scotland and Scotland could make it, that'd be much more exciting.
Like Secret Santa.
It won't make any difference because they can't, in Scotland, they'll have like their own tax raising powers, but they can't put tax up because everyone would leave. And they can't put tax down because they'd have less money. So it's a bit sort of theoretical. It's saying, now you're in charge of this, and now you'll keep doing exactly the same thing.
But the union is being hollowed out. It will sort of break down. I have no particular animus against the union being different countries. But then you think, well, people say, oh, well, we could be federal. And you think, yeah, but it works for America. America's enormous. If you look at a map, have you seen how little the UK is? And I mean, you know, and the four countries within it. I mean, Wales is roughly the size of Wales.
Well, I found the whole thing odd. Like, from an Irish perspective, it was all a Scotland, we're going to be free. We're going to be free. Yeah, what happens to Northern Ireland? Does that go with England? No. Scotland got three colonies out of the British Empire. Canada, New Zealand and Northern Ireland. But Canada's not 12 miles off the coast of Ayrshire. Right? That's what it was going to be like if they'd gone independent. First day, finally free, Scotland, got England out the hoose. Finally free, could do what I want, eat a tea cake off my belly. Yeah, tea cake, and then I get a plate, don't have to get a plate, it's my house. Eat a tea cake, stay off my belly, crumbs can go anywhere, it's my house. Ding dong, who's that at my door? Daddy, it's Northern Ireland! Hey, home, Papa Bear, just me and you. Can you imagine how long we're going to march?
I love the idea that Scotland only wanted independence so they could eat a tea cake off their belly without it. The Smith Commission, the body set up to strengthen devolution following the Scottish referendum, has concluded that the Scottish Parliament should have the power to set its own income tax rates and bands. This has a knock-on effect for various Scottish taxation systems, such as the Barnett formula, used to work out how much the Scottish Parliament should spend on hair products. The Scottish Unionist parties worked together with the SNP on these proposals. Labour put forward a watered-down devolution plan, the Lib Dems called for Home Rule, and the Conservatives just pray that the pandas at Edinburgh Zoo finally got pregnant and everyone forgets about this silly independence nonsense. So, 2 points to Jeremy. Rebecca, which bill won't come for free?
Are we talking about the rushing through of the terrorism legislation, which is being fast-tracked by Theresa May with the stuff that is endlessly going on in Syria and Iraq? There are lots and lots of people leaving the country to go and fight and lots of people trying to come back. And so Theresa May is having to deal with that. And so they are, as they often do, governments, they're trying to sort of rush through this series of knee-jerk responses. And there's a chap, David Anderson QC, who is the sort of monitor of this legislation, who's concerned about some of the laws and whether they're actually legal, which I believe is a requirement for laws. But clearly, they've got to do something, because at the moment, the security services are basically making soup in a sieve. There's just there's people kind of leaking out all and leaking back in again, all, and they can't keep a track of them at all. And there were these brothers who went to prison this week. They told their family they're going out for a meal in Walthamstow, and they ended up fighting in Syria. Now, I mean, I've had meals in Walthamstow which have felt like I was fighting in Syria. These chaps actually were.
But when people do it of their own accord, you think, well, you know, you might support them. I mean, these people originally went out to fight Assad, and we were against Assad, and we thought he's a horrible dictator. We want him to fall. But then what about if someone wanted to go out and fight for the Peshmerga? Because we now support the Peshmerga. What about our people who go out and get drunk and get into fights in Ayia Napa? Are we going to say that they can't come back to the country, or if they do, they have to become Methodists?
But there's a... Because there's a wonderfully British answer to this, which is that anybody who is a terror suspect has to go to de-radicalisation classes. And I think having evening classes as the answer is just such a wonderful... And I don't know, what's it going to be? What are they going to have in these... What are we going to sit...
Pilates. And it'll just be Pilates. You kind of lose the will to live after 45 minutes of that.
I want to kill everyone until I do Hour of Zumba. It's so jolly and upbeat. I'm losing so much off my hips. They won't. There's a really weird thing. It's apparently how they're smuggling out there. They're going, you know, like you were saying, they can't keep track of them, the ports and all the rest of it. They're going on cruise ships. Have you ever been on cruise before? It's fantastic. All food thrown in. I'm here to die. It can be like that, but you'll make friends.
There is something a bit odd about telling people that it's people who want to go off and die in a holy war, that if they do, they won't be allowed to come back.
Yeah, so that'll teach you.
But, I mean, these two who were in court the other day, though, it was fascinating, because part of the way that they caught them was that they'd filmed themselves doing basically everything, and it was on their phones. And there was a key bit in court when they crossed the border from Turkey, and they had a transcript of the dialogue that they'd filmed in the paper. And the dialogue was one guy going... Here for jihad, mate. And the other one going, yeah, mate, jihad, yeah. And that was it. And it was like Monty Python, you know. It was just like...
There is something wonderfully British about it. I like the way they've turned the scary-sounding terrorism prevention and investigation measures into the acronym TPIMS. It's like a lovely choice of drink at a garden party.
In Yorkshire.
In Yorkshire, yes. This week, the government has unveiled its counter-terrorism bill, which includes plans to seize suspected radicals' passports and ban suspected terrorists from re-entering the country. Judges could impose 16-hour curfews on suspects and ban them from meeting named individuals, using mobile phones or accessing the internet, or, if you prefer, grounding them. Because we're not angry future terrorists, we're disappointed. Secretary Theresa May said, "We are in the middle of a generational struggle against a deadly ideology." Yes, but next year we get a chance to vote out the coalition government. Boom. Actually, I shouldn't say that too loudly. People will think I'm a terrorist.
Danish terrorists.
Yeah.
We haven't seen them in 1,400 years. Don't think we've forgotten.
I'm a sleeper.
They smuggle themselves in flat pack form.
Yeah. If I could have found the Allen key, I'd be 6 foot tall. Now. Two points to Rebecca. Andrew, where is Law and Order, a black and white issue?
This would be Ferguson, Missouri. Mm. It's a suburb of St. Louis that used to be majority white, now is majority black, and the police are still almost exclusively white. And they gunned down a kid. And they've killed somewhere else in America. They've killed another kid since then. I have had a couple of encounters with the police in America. And the number one tip is, if you get arrested by American cops, be white. Just be white. And don't act white. If you're not white, just change colour right before them. You know, it's only when you've been experienced American cops that you're just so glad to be either Irish or British, where our old Bill don't get a gun routinely. Does anybody know anything about the Irish police force, the Garda Síochána Conna? They're a quality police force and they're the friend of the comedian. when I was 16, when I got arrested for teenage drinking in a park, when I drunkenly asked the cop, "Have you got a gun?" And I quote, he said, "Why would I need a gun when I can take off me shoe and bait you with it?" Less guns, more shoes. That's why Ireland has no history of tragic school shooings.
There's lots of bits about this story that are a bit weird. The St. Louis County medical examiner who arrived on the scene, he couldn't take photographs because the batteries in his camera had died. Now, I mean, he's the sodding medical examiner responsible for safeguarding law and justice, so why carry spare batteries? But it does seem extraordinary.
The ABC News ran an interview with the police officer who'd done the shooting, Darren Wilson, was it?
Yeah.
And this interview, in which he went through what had happened in a, has to be said, very sort of well-rehearsed way, it was conducted very much in the tone of, do you remember those sort of 1940s interviews they used to do over here with politicians, where they would sort of say, "Now tell me, Minister, you know, and forgive me if this is a hard-hitting question, but when you become Foreign Secretary, will you do as marvellous a job as you have done as Home Secretary?" It was very much... of interview. It was sort of, and I'm sure you're going to tell us that you couldn't have done anything else, could you? And he sort of said, "No, sir, I couldn't have done..." No, but I thought that was what you were going to say.
He said,
"I'm sorry, this is a massive story. This is a terrible thing that's happened."
Just... He said, "The reason I have a clean conscience is that I know I did my job right." A position known in this country as the Tony Blair defence.
In fairness, it has to be said that, you know, for an unarmed police force, our force do manage to kill quite a lot of people. The thing is, they're not routinely armed. People say, "We don't have an unarmed police force because they're not armed routinely. They're only armed in a context where they're going to shoot somebody." And you could say that about an armed robber in his defence. "My lord, my client was not a routinely armed robber. He only tooled up for special occasions, such as shootouts with the police."
I was arrested in Vegas a couple of years back. I was gigging out in Caesar's Palace in Vegas with the American comedians. And then about 2 a.m, I went out on the lash with the American comedians and I needed a pee. So I went up a darkened alleyway and I had a pee. And this cop car comes screaming down the alleyway. Both cops leap out. Both of them draw their guns on me straight away. Screaming it, "Put your hands in the air! Turn around! Put your hands in the air! Turn around!" I'm still peeing. So I'm turning around. The rich arc of wee-wee still... These cops were like, "Put your hands in the air! Put your penis away, sir! Put your hands in the air! Put your penis away!" I'm like, "Which?" I'm quite frightened right now, but it will not fully retract. It's a penis, not a snail's eye. Again, it just talked me way out of it. And it was that sort of thing, you know. I just, you know, "I'm Irish, you know, my family are NYPD. I know how hard your job is," and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, "Yeah, you know, it's a high crime density area." And I was thinking, "Yeah, that's what I was thinking. There's a lot of Mexicans." They were like, "We're not allowed to say that anymore. You could say that, you know." And we had a little bit of racist banter and I walked away. And it was only that moment you go, "Wow, what an extraordinary magic thing it is to be white."
There have been protests and rioting in a dozen cities across the United States after a grand jury ruled that a white policeman, Darren Wilson, would not face criminal charges for shooting dead unarmed black teenager Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Acting under increasing pressure and using quick wit and judgment, the United States government quickly tripled the presence of the National Guard in the small town, identifying a lack of firepower as a key issue in the incident. President Obama pleaded for calm, saying there is never an excuse for violence, which is reassuring to everyone in Afghanistan, Iraq, Guantanamo. 2 points to Andrew. Hugo, have a listen to this. Some girls are bigger than others. Some girls are bigger than others. Some girls' mothers are bigger than other girls' mothers. Hugo, why are nice people taking gastric measures?
The NHS has said that one way they can combat type 2 diabetes, I believe, is to offer fat-reducing surgery, gastric band surgery, to something like up to 2 million people. It's a huge amount of people, which they think will be sort of very effective. And it's a bit strange, this story, because you think it seems excessive to me, gastric band surgery, to help people lose weight. Because when you have a gastric band, what that does is, of course, seal off a bit of the stomach. and you think it might just be cheaper and a lot easier to seal off a bit of the fridge.
There are cheaper ways of...
I heard on the radio it wasn't gastric bands, but they didn't say what it was.
What?
They said it's not gastric bands, but it's other surgery. I was just maybe just cutting bits off, I don't know.
This guidance was co-authored by an obesity specialist. She's called Dr. Rachel Batterham. Probably the worst advice if you're looking to lose weight.
But Sandy, you've lost a huge amount of weight.
I have.
I mean, you've lost so much weight that I sort of wondered if you'd maybe got like wet after dark, like a gremlin, and a bit of you had shot off, and there was another one running around somewhere.
I have. I've lost 4 stone this year on purpose. It's really easy. I didn't have surgery. What I do is I pop a picture of David Meller on the dining table and just lose my appetite instantly.
If I lost 4 stone, I'd die.
Do you know what? People say, how did you do it? And you just say, you eat less and you move more. That's it. That's all there is to it. It's really not that difficult. But that's probably not a diet book in it, really, do you think? It's that.
You're still a huge hero, though.
Thank you, Tom.
You should do what Oprah did and have a wheelbarrow full of lard.
That
you just wheel around.
My sister's done the same thing. She's lost 3 stone. We reckon between us we've made another sister. Do you know what's extraordinary about the NICE report, right? If you look up on their website, the very first thing that comes up is a notice that says NICE uses cookies to make the site better. Oh, rub it in, why don't you? And the other thing, elsewhere in the report, they recommend against diets of under 800 calories a day on the grounds, I think, that it makes you a boring, irritable git. The National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, or NICE, has ordered the NHS to triple the amount of weight loss surgery it carries out. The move to surgery replaces the previous guidance that doctors should treat obesity through taunting and making piggy noises. NICE says obesity will be the major issue for the health service in the coming years, although Jeremy Hunt will remain a close second. 2 points to Hugo. At the end of the round, the scores are Jeremy and Rebecca have got 4 points, but so too have Andrew and Hugo. We start round two with a cutting from the Channel 5 TV listings page.
8 p.m, there's a rhino in my bed. 9 p.m, miracle babies.
And our thanks to John Freeman for sending us that. Jeremy, have a listen to this. And I'm left with only one point of view. Mr. Wonderful. Jeremy, who's been awarded an uncharitable response?
Ah, OK. So, Save the Children US had an award, and they awarded Tony Blair Best Supporting Actor in an Illegal War. it was because of all his work with, Make Iraqi Children History. And people keep saying, oh, stop going on about Iraq. No. Can't you just accept that Hitler was a half-decent painter and stop going on about all the other stuff? No. No, we can't stop going on about Iraq. But, yeah, he's got this award because of his anti-poverty work. And if you look at Tony Blair, he is clearly very, very anti-poverty. He's a role model for all people to get themselves out of poverty through sheer hard greed.
Be a fly on the wall of Tony Blair's sort of PR discussions. You can imagine them sort of, sitting around saying, the thing is, Tony, with you, it's a very particular problem, because it's not about whether you will be remembered, because you will be remembered. It's more about finessing the legacy. Do you know what I mean? Because, I mean, we've got the legacy. You know, we've got the whole warmonger thing. That's in the bag, so that's great. But let's just see if we can come up with something a little bit. Were you anything to do with the whole making poverty history thing? Was that... You were there. Brilliant, brilliant. We'll use that. That's great, even though 10 years on, poverty still isn't history. But nonetheless, that's going to be the legacy.
But the charity stressed that the award was given for his commitment to Africa and then not for anything else. But if you have to tot up the numbers of children dead as a consequence of your actions in Iraq and deduct from those the number of children possibly alive because of your work in Africa, and you still end up in the red, it's possibly still the wrong award, isn't it?
It's weird. Blair, he's loved in Sierra Leone.
Well, yes. That's nice.
It's not that weird. I mean, he did.
Yeah, he saved Sierra Leone from the child soldiers. It would have been an absolute massacre.
You know, so, I mean, we all hate him, but they love him scarily on. So, you know, even a broken clock's right twice a day.
I have to say, Save the Children, it's not the first time Save the Children have got things just a little bit on the wrong side. 20 years ago, I was an ambassador and had been for some years for Save the Children. And then I came out in the newspapers, and 4 days before I was to host their massive conference at the Albert Hall, they phoned me up and they fired me because they didn't want Princess Anne to meet a lesbian. Now... I'm going to guess, having been involved in the equine world, she'd probably met one before. But... they told me not to tell anybody. I was to keep it secret, but I put it in the papers. And there was, and like this one, there's been a mass protest by the staff of Save the Children.
What did they think you were going to do?
I don't know, but I quite like the idea.
We all know what she was going to do. Everybody knows they're insatiable. If he is put in front of another woman and then it all there would have been a letter in the palace.
Isn't it wonderful we're going to save the children apart from the gay ones?
The amazing thing about Blair, like, looking back, is just how different our politics is these days. Like, I was not long ago, I was watching the speech Blair made to his party conference just after 9/11. And it's this sort of amazingly kind of grandiose bit of oratory where he's talking about, you know, his plan for government is to introduce democracy to everywhere in the world that doesn't have it and reconcile the three Abrahamic faiths. And it's this huge kind of vision for humanity. And then sort of imperceptibly these days you have like Ed Miliband on stage and his great vision for government is to put a bit more tax on big houses. What's happened? You know, where have we gone?
Ed Miliband looks like he's never successfully interrupted a conversation. It does look, his entire life has been, in a second, Ed. David's talking.
I'm going to give an extra point, if anybody can tell me, who's been awarded a judgment telling him to get on his bike?
Andrew Mitchell, there's a turn-up. I mean, it's, you know, obviously, it's a very difficult... I mean, who to side with there? On the one side, you've got Tory politician, on the other side, you've got the Sun newspaper and the Metropolitan Police. You kind of think, blindfold them all and put them in a room with chainsaws, don't you? But the thing about pleb is, I mean, people say, oh, it's ridiculous. He wouldn't say pleb. He wouldn't use an antiquated term like pleb. And you think, well, he wasn't using it in the sense of the people who were one up from the slaves in the Roman Empire. It's just a term of abuse. Posh people just say pleb, meaning anyone who's not expensively educated. But then the copper is going to sue him, isn't he? Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know about that. The judge effectively ruled that the police were too stupid to have made the story up. According to the judge, P.C. Rowland did not have the wit to make up the allegations. Which is surely libelous, although perhaps he hasn't got the wit to realise. I don't know. Clipgate is one of the few scandals where it's OK to use the suffix gate, because, as it turns out, both things were involved.
Yes. That's very convenient.
Yes,
I would have enjoyed it much more if I'd known that before.
That's how good, isn't it?
I've been to Margate. That's the mother of all scandals.
There has been widespread criticism of the charity Save the Children after its US arm gave former British Prime Minister Tony Blair its Global Legacy Award. Blair is expected to be strongly criticised in the Chilcot inquiry into the Iraq War published next year. He's also in the running to replace the duck in the phrase, water off a duck's back. And for an extra point to Jeremy, former Chief Whip Andrew Mitchell has lost his High Court action over accusations he swore at a police officer and called him a pleb. The judge's name was Justice Mitting. He's quite strict, but his brother Purr is very lenient. His other brother Walter lives in his own well. 3 points to Jeremy. Rebecca, who got on his Pope box in Strasbourg this week?
Well, the clue is in the name, really, isn't it? This was the Pope. And the Pope went to address the EU in Strasbourg. He made, I think it was the shortest or one of the shortest papal visits ever. He was actually in Strasbourg for no more than 4 hours. Mm-hmm. So he literally kissed the ground running. And he went and addressed the EU and was quite rude about it. He was awfully rude about it and said some really quite... shockingly rude things, like he described it as being like a grandmother, elderly and haggard. which might explain why Nigel Farage wants to pull out, I suppose. And
I need a minute.
Since when? I mean, he said it was elderly and haggard, and I thought, well, yeah. Since when is that a bad thing?
Well, if you didn't, I have to say, you know, you're in trouble when the 77-year-old head of the Catholic Church says you're looking a bit tired. I mean,
but he's brilliant, the Pope. I mean, he's sort of wandering around doing all these, like, really what you'd think a Pope would do. Like, he just put up showers into St. Mark's Square so the homeless could wash and stuff. You'd be like, you've been popes for so many centuries, and why has no one ever done this before? It's like no one else had quite figured out what the point was of being in charge of Christianity.
I like Pope Frank. I haven't liked a Pope in a long time.
Yeah, but it is an extraordinary thing to be called antiquated by the head of an organisation that in 2014 can't get its head around gender equality or gay people existing. I mean, honestly, who needs irony when you have infallibility? It just seems...
I think he's right. Europe, the rest of Europe, except for us rainy islanders hanging off the edge, we've still got a bit of it about us. The rest of them, they're just dead on their feet. They don't believe in themselves anymore. They don't believe in anything. They're just... I was in Norway. These people are richer than, you know... I mean, they're loaded in Norway. But I was on stage in Oslo last year, and I went... It's just a way into material, as you know. I just went, is there anybody here got kids? And there was a silence. There's a room the same size as this. And somebody, a guy in the front row went, no, we don't have children in Norway. We have hobbies. Somebody else, we're planning to. Planning children? That's not the Irish way.
Pope Francis delivered a speech at the European Parliament in Strasbourg in which he warned Europe has become elderly and haggard and forfeited ideas for bureaucracy. The President of the European Parliament, Martin Schulz, said, "Your message of peace and dialogue, sincerity and responsibility for each other, of solidarity and togetherness, makes it very clear that together we need to find common solutions to our challenges," before adding, "Sorry, I wasn't really listening, but does that sound about right?" 2 points to Rebecca. Andrew, have a listen to this.
You got your troubles, well, I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together and see it through, 'cause you got a friend in me. Darling, you got a friend in me.
Andrew, why shouldn't friendliness be generally practiced?
Oh, right, sorry. I was thinking of Toy Story 4. They're going to make it, you know that?
Are they?
Yeah. Oh, I love Pixar. Anyway, the question.
Why were you thinking of that?
Well, it was Toy Story.
In the film.
Oh, I don't know, Danny.
it's in the cinema.
It was Michael Bubbly, whatever he's called. What's he called?
Have you never seen?
No, I don't think so.
You've never seen Toy Story?
No, it's an adaptation of a Dickens. No, I haven't seen it.
You're kidding me. You've got to watch the Toy Story movies this Christmas.
All right, I will.
They're really good.
Okay, thank you.
You're a lesbian and you haven't got a Buzz Lightyear.
The producer. If you broadcast that, I will kill you. I am so going home and renaming all my toys. I don't even remember what that question was about. What?
It was about Toy Story 4.
Shut up! Andrew!
Oh, my God, I love a mucky gag. this is about doctors, young doctors, being too familiar. See, apparently, doctors under 40 have taken to telling patients, "You can call me by my first name," wrong. Number two, hugging the patients, wrong. Number three, the wrongest of all, befriending their patients on Facebook. Ooh. Like, Facebook is wrong anyway. Like, if, honestly, what have we done as a generation? If your government came to you and went, we want to know everything about you, and none of this once every 10 years fill in a long, boring form every day, every hour, every minute, who are your friends, what are your connections, what do you like, what did you have for dinner? Take a picture of your dinner and send it to me! You tell your government to sling it. But we've given that to Facebook for free. And all we got back in return was the vague possibility of becoming reacquainted with some bellend from our primary school.
You don't want your doctor as your friend on Facebook? What a hideous... Imagine if you'd gone... I don't know, what if you'd gone for an MRI scan or something and your doctor changes your relationship status to "it's complicated"?
It's just coming up. It's like, Andrew is now friends with the Gentle Warts Clinic.
You should call them by their first name, because their first name is Doctor, isn't it?
Yes.
But the thing is, the doctors have said, because they feel friendly towards their patients, it means that they're really bad at giving them bad news. And you think, well, that's not a good friend. I mean, if you're friends with somebody and they've got a gaping chest wound, you say, I think we need to get you to hospital. You don't say, no, you look great.
But I hate over-friendly doctors. Have you ever, Rebecca, okay, you must have tried sometimes to make small talk while you're having a smear test. Have you done that? Okay. Seriously, if I wanted to have a boring conversation while being poked and prodded down there, I would have married a man. Seriously.
You've got a friend in here.
According to a study in The Lancet, young doctors could be bad for your health after it found many were blurring the boundaries between social and professional relationships. A survey of oncologists under the age of 40 discovered that 59% found it hard to be truthful if they liked the patient, a problem rarely encountered by receptionists. 2 points to Andrew. We start round three with a cutting from the Hay on Wye Guide to Bookshops leaflet.
Please support us in our attempt to keep Hay a Kindle-free zone. E-readers seriously damage the health of our booksellers. An electronic version of this leaflet can be downloaded at www.hayonwire.co.uk.
Our thanks to Louise Leet for sending us that. Jeremy, who thinks Mummy and Daddy might be excelling too much?
Oh, Professor Tanya Byron, who said that parents just planning way too much because parents live vicariously through their children and want their children to achieve so they can say, oh, this is so well. And you always look at them and you think, yeah, but they'll come a proper, you know, and they say, he's doing so well in his SATs, you know. It's only 2 months before he's born and he's already speaking French. And, so she said there's two extremes. There's the parent friend, the one who wants to be their kid's buddy, and then there's the ones that overly plan every second of their life.
These are the helicopter parents.
What are they?
They hover over their children. What are you doing now?
Mm. It's called the spreadsheet approach to parenting. In other words,
I'm seeing what you're doing all the time.
I bet Prince William does that. I bet he brings his helicopter into their enormous house and literally hovers over Prince George.
Back in the day, you know, your kids go missing for days. You know, people go, "Where's little Johnny?" You go, "He'll be home when he's hungry." Kids will come back.
I quite like the spreadsheet thing. I have a spreadsheet approach to parenting. It's really simple. What I do is I have one column, right, with name at the top, and then I have my children's names, and now I remember what they're called about 70% of the time. Have you been to hundreds of after-hours clubs and all that kind of thing?
No, I once spent a chilling hour. My daughter was into ballet, and I was sitting outside the ballet hall while she was having a lesson, and I heard this chilling monologue from this woman in which she was detailing to us another poor, hapless parent how her children spent their week. So she was talking about her son, who was the only boy in this ballet class. "Well, after this, I hope they finish on time because they're usually late, but after this, I've got to get him to lute, and then he's got, double Latin."
Oh, I thought you meant get him to go out and riot and smash up shops.
Get up
Darling, I
undoubtedly what he would have been
Father and I
doing.
Can't afford trainers. We've spent rather a lot on wine this month, I'm afraid. So if you could just get down to JD Sports. Here's a brick, darling. You know your size.
Me and my son, we go for cycles. We just go cycling and have a natter. We found a dead snake recently. Sat there, just poking a dead snake for a bit. We took our pictures with the dead snake and then we cycled on.
Do you find if you spend a lot of time, your cycles become synchronised?
Well, you did get really tired and moody at the same point in the day.
Well, the thing is extraordinary. 850,000 young people are thought to be suffering from conditions such as depression, which has been attributed to pressure from parents. Although, I have to say, I heard a few minutes of Radio 1 the other day and I thought it might be that, but... in a speech to the Girls' School Association annual conference, leading psychologist Tanya Byron has said schools have had to step into parenting roles because parents themselves are taking on a domineering spreadsheet approach to their children's lives or treating their children too much as friends. According to Professor Byron, the friend-parent phenomenon should be combated by parents giving their children containment and structure, or, without the jargon, investing in a cage. Too much of a projection of success from parents can lead to teenage stress and anxiety. Quick tip, another good way to stress them out is to use their smartphone as a drinks mat. To say. I'm amazed parents have the energy to be this controlling. If I can keep them from drinking my absinthe, I'm happy. 2 points to Jeremy. Rebecca, who won't be? I love this story most of all. I cannot bear how happy this story has made me. Rebecca, who won't be taking a taxi anytime soon?
Yes, that's one thing you won't be hearing is I had that David Meller in the back of my cab. Anyway, David Meller took a taxi with his partner. They were coming back from Buckingham Palace, I believe, and she'd got some investiture thing.
Gong,
thank you. And he got into an altercation with the cab driver about the best route. Always a mistake, I think you'll find. And anyway, he got very, very irate, David Meller, and the cabbie recorded this argument, this foul-mouthed rant, which was wonderfully ridden with all the stuff that police officers say that, you know, cabinet ministers say when they're having arguments about their bicycles. He didn't quite use the word pleb, but he did say, I think he said, you're a sweaty little git or something. I don't know, I've read various different versions. It was all this sort of stuff. It was, you think your experiences compare to mine? Do you know what I do? I'm an award-winning broadcaster. I've been in cabinet. I'm a Queen's Counsel. Just think... You shouldn't need to have to tell people that. Fundamentally, why the don't you know who I am argument is a really bad one.
As my beloved friend Linda Smith once said about him in the midst of his sex scandal with Antonio de Sanchez, she said, David Meller, the thinking woman's fat, ugly bastard. And then she said the last time anyone ran their fingers through his hair, it was a knit nurse.
What I can't decide about David Meller is whether he looks more like somebody from Mission Impossible who's midway through taking the mask off or like a half-used novelty candle of David Meller.
Former Conservative Cabinet Minister David Meller has apologised after being secretly recorded using offensive language in a heated row with a London taxi driver. Meller was apparently furious with the taxi driver, saying that he had ruined his partner Lady Cobham's special day. And given that she spends most of her days with David Meller, those probably don't come round all that often. In the 1990s, David Meller was known as the Minister of Fun, a reminder of just how bleak things were under John... John Major's government. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
This was actually left for me at the Key Theatre in Sudbury the other night, and it's from the Suffolk Free Press, but it was delivered anonymously. And it says, concerned residents will join a protest march next week against the possible demolition of Bellevue House in Sudbury. Simon Barrett, chairman of Sudbury Steering Group, said that there was currently a good offer on the table, thought to be from the hotel chain Premier Inn. People can poo-poo it, but that's where we are, and that's not to be sniffed at, he said.
Anybody else?
This is from Barry Etherington, and this comes from the Cumberland News. It's an article about fox hunting. Hunting foxes is still going on in Cumbria, and when they're caught, all they get is a smack on the wrist.
This one was sent in by Russ Greeno, and it's from the Gorcott newsletter. And it has a marvellous headline, Men in Sheds, Buckingham, coming soon. Men in Sheds provides a place where men of all ages can come along and take part in activities similar to what they would do in their own garden shed, but with the bonus of other like-minded men providing good company.
This one is from David Prangley, and it's from the BBC News website. It's headlined, Thieves Dig Tunnel to Cash Machine. Thieves built a 50-foot tunnel to steal a significant amount of money from a cash machine in Salford. The theft happened on Friday at Tesco in Liverpool Road. The raiders tunnelled under nearby wasteland overnight into the shop where they stole cash boxes. They then escaped back through the tunnel. Police said they were looking for people acting suspiciously on Friday night, possibly covered in soil.
There's a great... It must be a Manchester thing, because there was another one of those in Levenshulme, which is like the Kilburn of Manchester, right? It's an Irish part of Manchester. And they'd done the exact same thing. There was a cash machine in a mini shopping centre, and across the road, a bit of waste ground, it set up one of these, you know, these little striped tents, like we're workmen, we're doing something. Two dudes, 3 or 4 days digging underneath the road to get in there at night, break in, steal the money and come back. And then they calculated the amount of money that they had earned, split it by two, the amount of hours they'd been digging, they'd actually been working for less than a minimum wage.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Rebecca have got 8 points, but this week's winners are Andrew and Hugo with 9. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Times and Star newspaper in Cumbria, sent to us by Mr. F. Moore.
A bouncy castle was stolen from the Solway holiday village in Silloth. The £1,500 inflatable was taken between 7 p.m. on Thursday and 11:30 a.m. on Friday of last week. Police say it was not inflated at the time.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Rebecca Front, Andrew Maxwell and Hugo Ripkin. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Neil Sleet. The chair's script was written by Jack Bernhardt, Simon Littlefield and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by Lewis Peets, Joanna Wiggins and Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch. The producer was Sam Michel.